Cavalcade of Kings. George the Fourth. Cavalcade of Kings. In 1810, George the Third's youngest and best-loved child, the Princess Amelia, became dangerously ill. The possibility of her death preyed on her father's mind and brought on his third attack of mental derangement, which incapacitated him from ever reigning again. In 1810, his worthless son, George, Prince of Wales, was appointed Prince Regent. George Augustus Frederick was born on August the 12th, 1762, at St. James's Palace. Till the age of 19, he was kept under strict discipline, against which he often rebelled. At the age of 20, he met Mrs. Maria Fitzherbert, with whom he fell madly in love. 2 years later, we find them together at her house on Richmond Hill.
I love you, Maria. Ever since I first saw you that night at the opera, you've been in my thoughts night and day. I can't get you out of my mind. Won't you try and return some of the deep and lasting affection I bear you?
Your Royal Highness, please let's not discuss the subject again. You must be content with my friendship. If that does not suffice, then we must part.
I'll never let you go. Never. You're the one woman in the world for me. I need you. My whole happiness depends upon you.
As it once depended upon Mrs. Robinson and the many others who have found favor in your royal eyes, only to be cast aside when you've grown tired of them. I assure you, Highness, I've no intention of joining the long procession of the prince's lighter loves.
Maria, my feelings towards you are different. Don't you understand? I love you. Those others, fair game for any man who had enough money to purchase their favors.
Those are scarcely the words of a gentleman, Highness, but of an errant cad to whom decency and honor are of no account. Will you please go?
Oh, Maria, don't send me away. I'll apologize. I'll do anything. Give up everything. If only you'll try to love me a little in return.
If I thought you were sincere, I'd... But, oh, what's the use? The state would never sanction our marriage, even if you desired it. I am a Roman Catholic, and my religion will always be a barrier between us when it comes to a question of marriage. And I will not lower my standard by consenting to share an unconventional union with you. The role of the prince's mistress does not appeal to me.
Your mind has been poisoned against me. You've listened to the lies and the scandalmongers and their wagging tongues. Oh, Maria, Maria, if only you knew how much I love you. And how bitterly you have wounded me tonight.
Highness, I want to believe in you. I want to love you in return, but my heart tells me you're not sincere. Please go now. Let me think this out for myself. It's so big. And if you really are in earnest and truly love me, so sacred.
Very well, my darling. I'll leave you now. But before I go, I want to tell you again that I love you truly and sincerely. Think of those words when you go to sleep. Dream about them. I mean them. Good night.
Good night.
Wake up, Cumberland. Wake up, wake up, wake up.
What's that? Oh, 1,000 pardons, Highness. I must have dozed off to sleep in the carriage whilst waiting for you.
Well, I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, my Lord Duke, but I couldn't tear myself away from Maria. Dad, she's beautiful.
Divine. Allow me to fix the rug around your knees, Highness.
Thank you. Drive to White Cart.
Yes, Your Highness.
Ah, that woman's in my blood, Cumberland. I'll have her by fair means or foul.
I trust the lady was more amenable tonight, Highness. Frankly speaking, I prefer my women a little less beyond suspicion than is Mrs. Fitzherbert.
Well, I prefer something I've got to fight hard to get. The thrill is in the chase, you know, my dear Cumberland.
I've never yet seen the woman I'd put myself out for.
My Lord Duke, forget...
Except, of course, Mrs. Fitzherbert. Delightful creature. That she is.
Oh, well, here we are. We've arrived. I wonder if Brummer will be here tonight in his usual sartorial splendor. Yet to see him sitting at the bay window of White's is to see one of the sights of London.
They tell me he's invented another interesting mode for the cravat.
I must prevail upon him to teach my valet how it's done. Though I consider he'll never prove on his genius in starching the linen. It sets so perfectly that way, you know. But come along. Let's go into the club. The play has probably started already.
What shall it be, Highness? Hazard or faro?
Faro. I'm always lucky at that game.
Which is more than can be said of Lord Tennant. One night last week, he lost 120,000 at the game.
No, he was cheated.
That's what I told him. And he laughed and replied, "Then I consider myself lucky not to have lost twice as much."
I admire the fellow's sang-froid.
Bonjour, Monsieur Labuc.
Good evening, Count.
Say, tell me, who is that man?
The Count Montrond. They say he's the most agreeable scoundrel and the greatest reprobate in France.
Is he, Monsieur? Then let's ask him to dinner, tomorrow night.
Count Montrond.
Ah, my friend. What can I do for you?
His Royal Highness, the Prince Regent, wishes you to dine with him tomorrow evening at 9.
Oh, but yes, I shall be charmed. Thank you, Your Highness.
Well, don't mention it, but what on earth are you staring at?
Your Highness, I am always puzzled as to whether my friend, Monsieur le Duc, have three legs or three swords. They all seem to hang so close together and are of the same thickness.
The same thickness. Yes, sir, I agree with you. You have to pad your legs, Cumberland.
I shall be delighted to follow your royal example, Highness.
Ma foi, that was an excellent parry, my friend. So, the Prince Regent pads the legs, eh?
Enough! Monsieur le Count, I have changed my mind. The invitation to dinner is cancelled. Come, my Lord Duke. Let us proceed to the card room.
Prince George later went through a form of marriage with Mrs. Fitzherbert and lived with her openly as man and wife. By marrying a Catholic, he forfeited his title to the throne. When the matter was mooted in Parliament, he basically repudiated the marriage, and Mrs. Fitzherbert left England in disgust. It is now 1815, and in war-scarred Europe, all eyes are watching the activities of Napoleon, who has returned from Elba, bent on recovering his lost domain. The struggle culminated in the Battle of Waterloo, where the combined English and German forces under Wellington and Blücher gave battle to the indomitable little Corsican. It was some days before the issue was known in England, and the tension of the situation was strained to breaking point. But it never affected the Prince Regent, and at the moment we find him carousing with some of his boon companions.
Well, I'm a three-bottle man. And proud of it. Hey, listen. Did you know that they'd warned me off the course at Newmarket? Yes, warned me off the race course. Said I'd tampered with one of the horses.
Did you tamper with the horse, Highness?
Oh, you never can tell. You never can tell.
Highness, the courier has arrived.
Courier? What courier?
From the Duke of Wellington, Highness.
Oh, the Duke of... Oh, well, you idiot. Don't stand there gaping. Admit him at once.
Yes, Your Highness.
My lords, the courier has arrived. Let's have a wager on the news he brings from Wellington.
6-4, we've lost the battle.
Oh, a fine Englishman you are.
10-1, we've trounced the Corsican.
Hooray! That's it.
Highness.
Well,
you've nearly 2 hours.
What of it?
I bring very important news, sir. News which every man has been anxiously waiting to hear.
Yes, it would have become you better to have spent the time in changing your linen before bursting into my presence. Your clothing is foul with blood and mud.
Yes, Highness. Mud and blood from the battlefield of Waterloo, where men have died for their country, while the Prince Regent carouses at home like a pig in a sty.
By God, I'll run you through! Wait, Highness, that you...
This man's tired to the point of exhaustion. He has ridden far and fast to bring us the tidings. Hear him, I pray, with patience, and in mercy's name forgive him his outburst.
I'll overlook it this time.
Well, what's the news, courier?
I bring news of the great and glorious victory which my Lord Duke of Wellington has won for England.
In 1820, George III died, and his wretched son succeeded him on the throne as George IV of England. His coronation took place on July the 19th, 1821, and his wife, Princess Caroline of Brunswick, whom he had married in 1795 and whom he had always treated abominably, died a month later. It is now 1830, and George IV is dying of dropsy. The Bishop of Chichester is standing at his bedside.
The first gentleman of Europe, dying alone, deserted by all, not a friend left to close his eyes and sleep when the breath of life parts from his miserable body. Ah, what do I care for any of them? I've lived my life in my own fashion. I've been a man, not a cipher as my father was before me. Perhaps I've suffered pangs of remorse for the things I've done and the things I've left undone. But that is my affair. I've been the master of my own fate, and I'm answerable to nobody. Nobody.
Nobody except God.